from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, we'll get reaction and analysis in our first half hour about the proposed bipartisan budget agreement unveiled last night by House Republican Representative Paul Ryan and Democratic Senator Patty Murray. Then we turn our attention to the ongoing political turmoil and civil strife in Ukraine, which many believe may mean a revolution in that country. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Last night, Wisconsin Republican Paul Ryan, who chairs the House of Representatives Budget Committee, and Washington Democratic Senator Patty Murray, who chairs the Senate's Budget Committee, unveiled a two-year bipartisan budget agreement, which avoids government shutdown, replaces the sequester, and provides a level of certainty on spending. The proposed package includes $63 billion in sequester relief, $85 billion in total savings, and $23 billion in net deficit reductions, with discretionary spending of over $1 trillion for fiscal year 2014, that going up slightly in 2015. This opening Forum half hour, we want to discuss the proposal and its likelihood of passage. And joining us from Washington, D.C. is Heidi Presbella, who is congressional reporter with Bloomberg News. And welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael. Nice to be here.
Glad to have you here. Also glad to have Bruce Kane, who is professor of political science at Stanford and also now is head of the Bill Lane Center for the American West. Welcome, Bruce Kane.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. And Heidi Presbella, let me begin with you. This is the word I keep seeing is modest, most of all, from both sides. But it does not raise the debt ceiling, and that means that we won't have government stoppage if it's passed. But both sides seem to be unhappy. There's nothing really on entitlement, and there's no new taxes.
Well, they're unhappy in the sense that if you consider where we started 3 years ago on this whole torturous path of trying to cut a bipartisan compromise, the goal was to have a package of about $1 trillion to $4 trillion to help and try and address the long-term debt. This clearly is just a sliver of that. I mean, this $23 billion that the Republicans are going to tout to try and get Republican support for the deal is really just such a drop. Minuscule drop in the bucket. That yes, both sides you can say are unhappy about it, considering where we started. However, the reaction this morning on Capitol Hill is one I think of optimism that at least they're doing something, and at least we're not going to have this threat of a government shutdown once again hanging over us, which has been frankly happening every 6 months, and culminated in I think which really has been a tipping point, an actual shutdown for the first time in 17 years in October. So in the sense that it's moving away from this pattern of dysfunction in Congress, you do have members, leaders on both sides hailing the agreement, you know, just in those terms.
Bruce Kane, maybe the question is who is more unhappy? I mean, Darrell Issa, for example, says the Republicans are going to back this, but the Democratic majority won't, particularly because we're seeing a cutoff of unemployment benefits that would begin around the 28th of December, and other things that the Democrats don't like, such as a lack of tax cuts, of any taxes at all. So at this point, I mean, it seems to be Republicans are coming out and saying, well, we'll back it begrudgingly in most cases, but nevertheless, Cantor and others are signed on board. Rubio's on the other side. But Democratic lawmakers can't be happy about this either, even though the president's behind it.
Yeah, I think it was explicitly designed to make both sides unhappy. And I think they did a pretty good job because, you know, in a lot of cases, you're kind of splitting things down the middle. And yes, the Democrats did not get some very important things that they wanted. They didn't get tax increases, although let's point out that they got some fee increases. The airline fees are going up, and fees may not be technically called taxes, but look like a tax to me.
Well, it's a pay for airline security, right?
Yeah. Well, yes. But still, it's a tax, right?
Yeah.
It's a dedicated tax. And so they did get some things. I think they probably got enough. Their support, you know, the president's behind this, the White House is behind this. And I think, let's not forget, the one provision that's really important politically is that this is a two-year deal, because we're headed into another electoral cycle. And as was pointed out, if you're having constant shutdowns and fights over the debt, and you can't get your act together on the budget, that's bad for everybody. So there is that electoral relief by having a two-year plan.
So when Patty Murray says that this is a major breakthrough as far as partisanship and gridlock and an important step in healing congressional wounds, that may be overstating things?
Yeah, I think it's overstating things, but I think it's important. I mean, I believe that you can only go so far in moving us incrementally towards some sort of agreement when the country is so heavily divided on so many issues. So for most of us that watch it from the outside, any step forward, any kind of agreement is better than where we were. At least both sides understand that until there's some consensus about things, both sides can stop each other. So frankly, I think the consensus around the country will be this is a good thing, and I think electorally it's valuable for both parties not to go into another round of bitter fighting.
Heidi Presbella, the Washington Post said that the Democrats got really beat up on the sequester, on the automatic spending cuts. Do you agree?
In the sense that the automatic spending cuts are not fully replaced. That was a goal going into this, that the Democrats, you know, initially have been floating plans even to just put off the spending cuts completely, which was what we've done in the past. If you look at previous attempts by Congress to kind of bind itself to cut spending, future Congresses just come back and undo that. Clearly, we're dealing with a much different Congress this time. They weren't able to do that. But I think the Democrats actually come out of this at least on par with the Republicans, because, as Bruce pointed out, the tax increases, I mean, let's just call them for what they are, these fee increases, you know, Republicans are going to get beaten up over that on the right. And they're increasing spending. There's no way around it. If you look at the spending caps that were supposed to be in place as part of the sequester, we were supposed to be at about $967 billion. Those are going up to $1 trillion. And yes, this is a two-year deal, but keep in mind that in the back of the minds of many of these lawmakers who cut this deal, we're going to use those next 2 years to try and come up with another way to put these cuts off. You know, clearly their ultimate goal is to cut the grand bargain, but frankly, that's been pretty elusive. But I wouldn't be surprised, you know, look at the turnover in Congress. Another 2 years from now gives them a lot of time to buy, come up with some other mechanism to, again, kind of kick the can down the road if we can't come together on entitlements and taxes, which is ultimately what needs to happen.
Well, 2 years notwithstanding, another crisis looms in March. The government statutory borrowing authority lapses.
With a debt ceiling, yes. But you know what? I spoke with Senator McCain about this yesterday, and he said, look, folks are crediting Patty Murray and Paul Ryan with averting another shutdown. That another shutdown wasn't going to happen regardless, because the Republican Party is too beat up and bruised from what happened during the last shutdown. If you look at where they started, this wasn't even about spending. The fight was about Obamacare. And Speaker Boehner knew going into the battle that it was just a losing proposition. So each week we saw them kind of ratcheting back their demands to eventually basically not getting a single thing that they had asked for, you know, as leverage in these negotiations. And on top of that, getting the bulk of the blame for a shutdown. Congressional approval ratings are now at their lowest level ever reported by the Gallup organization, about 9%. And a lot of that blame gets put at the doorstep of the Republicans and the Tea Party in particular. And I do think this is, in a way, I don't mean to overplay it, but if you look at what Speaker Boehner was saying this morning when he was asked about the opposition from conservative groups, I have never heard him speak so forcefully about the problems that a lot of these outside conservative groups have created for him over the years. He said they are, quote, using lawmakers and using the American public for their own goals. And so you're starting to see a bit of a pushback here by the leaders, Republican leaders, Speaker Boehner in particular.
Well, Republican Congressman Jeff Miller said this morning after a caucus meeting that most Republicans will back the deal, and that looks like it's likely to happen. And I suppose, Bruce Cain, we could say at this point, maybe fait accompli, a done deal?
Yeah, I mean, I would never bet on anything as being 100% certain when it comes to congressional votes. But it certainly looks very good. I mean, you get into trouble when Boehner tries to do the majority rule. But when he opens it up, Nancy Pelosi has been able, on most cases, in fact, every case, to deliver the Democratic votes that Boehner needs. So, and I think the other thing about this is that if you look at it, the pressures in the primary, which are really the ones that are polarizing the two parties, are greater on the Republican side now than the Democratic side. We're starting to hear some rumblings that the left inside the Democratic Party is getting upset and will put more pressure. But at the moment, if you look at where the primary challenges are going to be in the upcoming election, it's going to be over on the Republican side. So what they're doing, I agree, is on the Republican side is very significant because there will be Tea Party challenges. So basically, somebody in the Republican Party, the establishment, is throwing down the gauntlet and saying, look, here we're going to go. We're going to go take this risk, and let's see what happens in this primary season. But I don't see the same thing happening on the Democratic side.
Well, we just received a tweet from former Secretary of Labor Robert Reich, who says, new budget deal doesn't close tax loopholes for wealthy, restore food stamps to poor, or extend unemployment benefits for jobless, dumb. What do you think about the deal? If you have some thoughts or if you have some questions, we welcome your involvement in the program. And now is the time, because this is a half-hour segment. We're going to talk about Ukraine in the second half of the opening hour segment. If you'd like to join us now, please do. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, and that's toll-free from anywhere, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Join us, 866-733-6786, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, and you can also tweet us. And again, our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Lawmakers have announced a budget deal. What do you think about it? And if you have questions on it, feel free to join us. We're with Heidi Presbella, who is congressional reporter with Bloomberg News, and Bruce Cain, professor of political science at Stanford, who is also director of the Bill Lane Center for the American West. Heidi, since you're up on the Hill all the time, I mean, would you echo some of what you just heard from Bruce, that you really, this is just not predictable? Nothing really is predictable when it comes to lawmakers?
I've had a hard time calling this one. We've been pretty skeptical all along that they'd even come to a deal just based on past experience. However, I do think when you have the leadership united like this, because there's been some tension in the past, for example, between Speaker Boehner and Eric Cantor, Majority Whip, Kevin McCarthy, and here the leadership is really united. And I think that when you consider the fact that this will probably also have, at the end of the day, strong Democratic, decent Democratic support, that they'll be able to pull off enough Republicans who are, you know, Boehner allies, appropriations Republicans, you know, defense hawk Republicans, to combine with Democrats who, you know, Nancy Pelosi will be rounding up and Steny Hoyer will be rounding up to get this done. There was some early concern, definitely, particularly about the provisions on federal employees, because, you know, a big part of this agreement was to increase pension contributions by federal employees. And when you look at the leadership in the House, many of them represent the state of Maryland, where you have many federal employees, and those lawmakers were going to stand ready to torpedo this agreement. But they came back with something which I think, considering where they started, which was with about a $20 billion cut to pension plans and federal employees, they came back. What they did was they split it, the difference with the military. Now, I know that's not going to be necessarily popular, but they did manage with that move to get those critical members back on board. And if you look at the statements that are coming out since last night. The Democrats seem pretty united. You know, the Republican leadership seems pretty united. I'd be surprised if at the end of the day, after a lot of chest pounding, that this doesn't go through, because look at what the alternative is.
I'm also looking at a quote from Peter Roskam, the GOP's chief deputy whip. He says, I think it's a good accomplishment in a divided government. I think it's going to receive very strong support. So you're hearing that, but of course you're also hearing not only from the Tea Party, but people like Marco Rubio, a good deal of consternation and concern. Let me go to your calls, though, and let's begin with Jim. Jim, you're on Forum. Good morning.
All right. I think this is a bad deal for the Democrats. There's several things they wanted, including extending unemployment benefits and SNAP benefits. And if they had shut down, if the government had been shut down, the Republicans were set up to take the blame. So the Democrats should have held a hard line on their negotiations and got much more of what they wanted.
Well, we're talking with unemployment benefits, Bruce Kane, about 1.3 million people. It's a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the one, well, the most important omission in this deal from the Democratic point of view is the unemployment part. And so if there were kind of a rift, and if the Democrats were to try to get something put back into the deal, it would be on that. But as far as I can tell, I mean, they were pushing very hard for that and just getting nowhere. And I don't know whether this is a deal that can be amended in any way at this point without having the whole thing blow up. And then it's not obvious to me at this point. But I understand that that is a major omission, that a lot of Democrats are going to be upset about that. I personally think it's a tragedy, too. But at some point, you do have to move forward.
Well, let me move to it. I'm sorry. You want to say something, Heidi Prezwell?
Well, you know, I do think that, you know, Speaker Pelosi made clear that Democrats wanted to see unemployment insurance extended as a sidebar. And I think that there are a lot of talks going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. Speaker Boehner spoke with the president, we're just now learning a few days ago, about unemployment insurance. And he said, you know, if we can come up with a way to kind of have a pay for it, find some additional savings in the budget, which there should be stuff left on the table after these negotiations, that he's certainly open to it. I had been told, you know, a couple of weeks ago that Republicans were kind of considering that as a bargaining chip, that at the end of the day they would agree to it. And so they're clearly not ruling it out. So the door has not been closed on that. And I think that there might be just a lot more going on behind the scenes that we know about, that we don't know about.
And we'll bring Gary on as our next caller. Gary, join us. Hi, you're on Forum.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
From the beginning of the sequester deal, the only good thing about it I could see was it was going to allow us to cut military spending without anybody getting blamed for it. And they're just going to let it lapse. I can't believe it. That's my question. Thank you.
Well, that's a good question. Bruce Kane, they kind of, as was indicated earlier, split this whole sequester thing as far as the military down the middle.
Yeah, they did. And I think, again, the listener is right. This is something that a lot of Democrats wanted to do, was to restore a little more of the balance towards the non-defense discretionary spending as opposed to putting it into defense. But again, this was actually the aspect of the original sequester that would bring the Republicans to the table, because those cuts to the defense, I thought they would hurt more earlier, and that the negotiations, we wouldn't have had what we had the last couple of years, but it wasn't sufficient, but did bring them eventually to the table. So, again, from a point of view, a pure Democratic point of view, this deal sucks. That's not the point. The point is that something has to happen. We have to move forward. You're going to have to make concessions and compromise in the American political system because the Republicans control the House. If the Democrats sweep everything, then the Democrats can dream about a Democratic program. But as long as the Republicans control the House, you've got a problem, and you've got to do the best you can under those circumstances.
Well, one of our listeners, Ted, weighs in by email and says, with quantitative easing ending, we are in danger of another recession. Fiscal stimulus is needed now. The deal is insufficient and dangerous. Did any talk to that? Did the S word and stimulus even come up in any of these discussions, Heidi Prezwell?
It certainly came up on the Democratic side, and yes, this is another area where, you know, just days before the deal was cut, House Democrats took to a press conference to say, from the beginning, our demand has been that we need to have some kind of a jobs package in here. We need to have some infrastructure spending, which also would create jobs, and that, yeah, we're approaching a dangerous time here where the stimulus money is drying up. The economy is still struggling. And so yes, I mean, that's a very legitimate point and area where Democrats, got no traction, essentially. They did try, an 11th-hour effort to have those items considered, but it just wasn't in the cards.
And also must have been, the Democrats must have been unhappy, I imagine, Bruce Kane, about the fact that $22 billion in Medicare cuts are in this. That's for the year 2022 and 2023, but still down the line.
Yes. I mean, I don't know enough about where those cuts are going to impact. But, I think it is an important feature of this that we haven't really talked about, which is that there are actually, if you think about that in a broad sense, that is a kind of entitlement cut. And once again, if we're going to get anywhere, there's going to have to be some deal that involves some trading off of entitlement cuts with the restoration of funds. So the deal is being portrayed as sort of not making any inroads on major issues like entitlement cuts or fee increases or tax increases. And I think people are missing that, at least in subtle ways, we're making politically feasible compromises in both of those fronts.
We've been talking about how unhappy the Democrats are, but the conservatives are pretty unhappy as well. And one has to ask Bruce Kane if that schism is going to continue down the line here, with respect to the Tea Party and the conservatives being essentially in opposition and in opposition in ways that are going to be strident.
Yeah, I agree with that completely, Michael. I think I agree that the deal will go through, I think, from what we can see. But I don't think the political question is settled at that point, because the problem for the Republican Party is they're caught between two incentives. One is the general election incentive of not looking like they're too far out on the extreme to win elections, and they don't want to have a disastrous Senate election like they did last time. But on the other hand, you have these primaries and these caucuses, which are low turnout events that don't have many independent voters, don't have many general voters. Sometimes the turnout is, below 15%, and in these caucuses, you're talking about single-digit turnout in terms of eligible voters. Those are situations in which well-financed, well-organized, and motivated voters are going to dominate. And they're the ones that are going to not forget about this deal, and they're going to be upset about it, and they're going to send signals. So if the Republican Party wants to make this work, the establishment party has to really identify those races and win and support people that are supporting them on this deal. Or, once again, you will have a similar crisis where the Tea Party does have leverage and the outside groups do have leverage and Boehner is weakened.
Well, here's a quote from Rand Paul, senator from Kentucky, Republican potential 2016 presidential candidate, announced his opposition, saying that, quote, the undoing of tens of billions of this modest spending restraint is shameful and must be opposed. When are they going to vote, Heidi?
We're just getting information in now from Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid's aide, saying they will definitely vote sometime next week. I think the big challenge here, if there is one, is going to be in the House. If it makes it to the Senate, folks like Rand Paul are more than safe to go ahead and make their votes, in a manner that's going to be the best political move for them, going forward, considering all of the Tea Party brouhaha over this that Bruce mentioned. But at the end of the day, I think they're, not a question that this wouldn't pass the Senate.
We thank Heidi Presbula from Bloomberg News. We thank Bruce Kane from Stanford and the Bill Lane Center for the American West. When we return, we're going to talk about Ukraine. I'm Michael Krasny.